It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running on what is, in fact, this, the final week of September 2017. It is the 25th day of September 2017. September has flown by, and today I saw the first red-tinged leaves of autumn. The last couple of autumns haven't been particularly spectacular autumn color-wise around here, and it just sort of jumped out at me. I was like, well, yeah, how about that? Usually somewhere around the third week of October that we peak, and I realize it has something to do with the amounts of constant darkness or something, but I think water plays a part in it, and that is sort of, yeah. What? But anyway, I saw the first red leaves today, so you know, we'll have the beautiful autumn colors, and then we'll have the deep sadness of several months of backbreaking propane purchases. Yay! That's whatever. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And, in fact, that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the madcap multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat room and participate with the other denizens thereof during the 3 hours in which this program is live, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And if you do, if you pick out a screen name and a password, it's all free, of course. Everything at The Horn is free. Well, everything that is, except new from Horn Labs. And we got a testimonial over the weekend from our friend Keith. New from Horn Labs, belligerent bell pepper. Belligerent bell pepper will put a spicy little kick in your step. It has all the nutritional goodness of a day's serving of bell peppers in a tiny handful of capsules. That's right, belligerent bell pepper. From Horn Labs, we use a proprietary process to extract all that bell pepper goodness and put it into a single capsule. And for only $29.95, you can have, in fact, you can have a month's supply of belligerent bell pepper from Horn Labs, as well as, if you act now, and operators are standing by, goodness me, for only a dime more, you can have a 2 month supply for $60. That's right. Belligerent bell pepper from Horn Labs. Except no substitutes. Yes. Everything's free here, the screen name, the password, the participation, and the, yeah. And you'll immediately be met by the likes of Anatole and Earther and Hoghead and Kid Mark. And you'll be, and more, to wander in later in the program. And along the way, well, golly Moses, you'll be capably moderated both by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space on what must certainly be a lovely Northern California afternoon to become Man Cave. And, of course, you will also be moderated by midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Welcome, 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 one and all. Jump in there. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Yes, yes, indeed. So that pretty much sounds. That's everything. Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa wants to know: does belligerent bell pepper help with the meat popsicle situation? Bob, I'm asking for a friend. Well, have you ever seen how big a bell pepper can get? Huh? Well, we don't put all that bell pepper goodness into belligerent bell pepper for nothing, do you think? Right. And remember, there's so much, well, how can I put this? I've never much cared for bell peppers. So, to this day, the only way that I can get my fill of bell pepper goodness is with a handful of belligerent bell pepper capsules from Horn Labs. Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And so, since we haven't sold a whole lot of Horn Labs products, mainly because, well, you know, they don't exist, we continue to subsist and keep this program going on the goodwill of you, the Horn Family Community Congregation. And so, consequently, as is always the case, thanks are due. Thanks going out this particular evening to our subscribers. In particular, thank you to Kay. Kay in California. Thank you, Kay. And thank you to Asa, who is not Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to Asa. Very, very kindly. You know, the subscription crew over the weekend isn't just Sunday night to Monday. We have subscribers on the 24th as well. So thanks there go out to Pam. Thank you, Pam, in Washington, and thank you very kindly to Jason in San Jose. Thank you. He said, scrolling downward. And thanks as well to our dear friend of long standing, Philip in Maryland. Thank you, Philip. Thank you to Stacy. Thank you, Stacy in PA. Thank you, Brenda in Washington State. And thanks also to Joyce in Washington State, as well as to Samuel. Sam, thank you very kindly, up in Michigan. Thank you one and all to our subscribers. Of course, I'd note that we're still looking to get all the way to the 100th subscriber, so that and you can subscribe either going, and this is set it and forget it. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, click the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and you can put in $10 there or $20 or whatever number you see fit. At the $10 level, what you're actually kicking in is about 16 cents per hour of programming to make sure that this program remains available for not just yourself, but for anyone who wants to listen to it. That's about as uncapitalist as you can get. So thank you one and all. Remember, there is also, for people who don't care much for PayPal, there's a subscription campaign going on over at Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com, Bob Kincaid, Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And we're still, but either way, We're trying to, one of these days, get 400 $10 a month subscribers so that I can quit wasting the front end of the program talking about all of this, and the horn will be sort of self-sustaining at that point. That's the idea. And if you want to kick in more without subscribing, that's fine too, because here's the bottom line. We closed the program Friday. It's not very often we have a Friday on the front porch goose egg, but this past Friday was one of them. Still, we had a rousing Jim Dandy good conversation, but it was a goose egg Friday. And so thanks to all of those subscribers that I just listed, we managed to roll in here, and we've got a fundraising deficit beginning this Moran Monday, because it is Monday, the 25th of September, 2017. We've got a fundraising deficit of $120. And that, you know, we know you, me, not just me and that mouse in my pocket. We know these things are going to happen, because at the end of the month, things get pretty thin and pretty narrow. So it's a great time to be a subscriber if you're looking for a particular spot on the calendar to make that happen. I mean, let's see, with what we've got, it would actually take 18 more $10 a month subscribers to finish the fundraising for the 25th day of any given month. All right, so that's where that is. But anyway, we finished with a $120 deficit. That means the fundraising goal for this evening is $320. 32 folks at $10 a piece. 32 brand spanking new $10 a month subscribers. 10 people at $320 a month, and it's just unreasonable to think that we would even have one $320 a month subscriber. From there, 2 at 160, 4 at 80, 8 at 40. 16 at 20, 32 at 10, 64 at 5, 128 at about $2.50, 256 at $1.25, and 512 at... I had to get down to the point where we had to round up, because after all, 512 at 63 cents, because we'll be rounding up that half a penny from 62 and a half cents, and we will put that into the Horn Fabulous Horn Mansion Zen Koi Pond Fund. Yes. I know. Arthur says, belligerent bell peppers from Horn Labs. Hey, what's the matter, you? Yeah. one more thing. Please, I want you to be assured that none of the bell peppers which are used to make belligerent bell peppers are the kinds that turn, you know, orange, because they're gross. We've got one belligerent orange thing in this country. And that's an abundance, an overabundance. That's a surfeit. So there we have, and so now we get to the program, the part of the program where we talk about program notes, the things coming up in the near future. Over the weekend. I found out that I'm going to be hitting the road next week. And, going on vacation again so soon, Bob? No. We're nowhere near 12 years for the next vacation. No, I'm headed back to D.C. Because we've got an opportunity to do some more work with regard to the AIC Act, the AIC campaign, and in particular with regard to the suppression of the health science review that has taken place, thanks to the Kaiser Kumquat administration. So it goes almost without saying that there will be no programs next week. So that means that we're not just running downhill to try to finish out the month of September to the good or to the even. We're not just trying to lick the Lithuanian, nudge the Norsky, and cash the check. Remember, we've got a new challenge out there, cash the check. We're also going to be trying to get ahead of, or not get ahead of, we never get ahead of anything, but stay even with fundraising for the week that I'm going to be gone, so that we won't be trying to double fundraise the week after I get back, because, well, frankly, we can't miss entire. But anyway, that's I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be gone all next week, Monday through Friday. Okay, I'll assuming no blowouts and stuff like that, maybe I'll be back in time for, and I will try to be back in time for, a Friday on the Front Porch program, which would be, Friday, October the 6th. Friday, October 6th, 2017. So, Agnes, who will be, of course, staying behind and keeping everything going here. Agnes will make sure that there's a not too terribly stale rerun on each of those five nights next week. Not this week. All nice, fresh, new programs like we always have. Next week, we have... next week will be reruns, with my sincere apologies. Yeah. So, that's pretty much all of the announcements, I think, for the immediate, near, foreseeable, contemplable future. So that now we can get into the business of more and Monday. Mm-hmm. Thank you very kindly to Charlene. Charlene got us started, so that takes us down under the $300 mark and $290 to go to finish off fundraising for today. Thank you, Charlene. I'm kind of two minds with where to go with the conversation as we get it going this evening. But get it going, we certainly must. Mm-hmm. And how does this work? Wait a minute.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn, evidenced by the fact that the Moran didn't know how to punch the little buttons just moments ago. We'll see what we can do about having him replaced. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Moran Monday on the horn. An experience like nothing else on the Carnival Midway. Here, right here. This very place, this very spot, this time, this hour, this moment, this day. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas,
You'll find them all. We've got Morans of every variety. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpanzees, Republicans, libertarians, one and all. They're all here, friends and neighbors, right here in the Moran Monday tent. Just a few scant spare steps away from where you were only moments ago throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a desperate attempt to win that baby iguana you've wanted for so, so very long. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Only 16 cents per hour of programming for anybody who cares to contribute. You can come right into the Moran Monday tent for free, friends and neighbors. But if you can make a donation, it makes things ever so much easier to keep the Moran Monday tent open. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. 16 cents per hour of programming for every $10 a month contributor. There's no bigger bargain on the Carnival Midway. No greater source of entertainment or information. A gentle reminder, gentle viewer, gentle auditor of the Moran Monday tent. Keep a close hand on children, pets, including little iguanas, purses, bags, European-style messenger bags, wallets. Yes, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, and you will, you will, you will, especially on a day like today. When we've had a weekend in which to collate and staple and fold and spindle and mutilate entire stacks of Morans, oh, it can get ugly. It really, really can. Where to start? I know as well, for purposes of the time capsule that is this, the archives of this program, that we are back to having our attention grabbed and singularly focused upon the national anthem. Because you heard it here live on Friday evening. It was just a gift of the goddess of irony that I potted up Tangerine Tiberius as he began screaming to the Trumpanzee faithful, the maggots, there in Huntsville, Alabama, that anyone who didn't kneel for the national anthem at a football game who was a football player. He wasn't demanding that all the people in attendance kneel. They have to stand, mind you. If you're in the audience, you stand, but if you're... Anybody who kneels is a son of a bitch and has to be fired. Now, from a historical perspective, I will note that this is not, and I haven't seen this mentioned in the for-profit media over the weekend, this is not the first time that a president has called someone a son of a bitch. Now, to be fair, Clementine Caligula did not call Colin Kaepernick a son of a bitch by name. It's just that everybody knew who he was talking about because he's the one who started the kneel during the national anthem protest. But because the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is not just the commander-in-chief, but the Moran-in-chief, while calling for Colin Kaepernick to be fired, He failed to neglected to observe that Colin Kaepernick isn't playing professional football right now. Because, you know, Trump. Because you can't expect the spirochetes to keep up with everything. So that there's that, one, more in. Two, yes, a president of the United States has called someone else a son of a bitch. I believe, I know that the person who called someone a son of a bitch was Harry S. Truman. I believe the person whom he called a son of a bitch was a Washington newspaper columnist by the name of Drew Pearson. Now, just a wonderful example of how my weird little brain works, and just how thoroughly enmeshed the goddess of irony is in all of this. I remember Drew Pearson because at the time that I learned about this, the Dallas Cowboys had a receiver whose name was Drew Pearson. They didn't spell it the same way. And now we've got a controversy with the president calling someone who isn't Drew Pearson, but is a football player, a son of a bitch. Whoa! We, my friends, are deep into the clockwork of the universe. Jason merely says, the brain stems, but I hate resorting to name calling. Meanwhile, Carol Baker points out, I've spent the last several days trying to console my flag. Poor thing is literally having some kind of emotional breakdown. Thanks, Obama. Yep. Because, of course, the tweeter-in-chief once said, once being back on the 28th day of February 2011, burning a flag is a peaceful and respectful way for citizens of this very great country to voice their displeasure. Very powerful. That statement of 28 February 2011 at 8:14 p.m., that was back when he tweeted at night, that thing was retweeted 22,630 times, and it was liked by 74,699 people. Burning a flag is a peaceful and respectful way for citizens of this great country to voice their displeasure. Very powerful. So, white guy say burning flag good, but if black guy kneels during national anthem, terrible, very bad, horrible. As Carol points out, some tweets just don't age well. He deleted the tweet, but Lord, I do love my Wayback Machine. Turns out I can burn the flag so long as I remain standing. Or, you know, so long, Carol, as you remain white? Yeah. I think, yes. Yes. With a little confirmation, Scott out with his controller. Punky reminds us that Harry S. Truman called General Douglas MacArthur, Drew Pearson, and Richard M. Nixon a son of a bitch. JFK called the heads of the steel companies sons of bitches. So that part of the... No, it's... You know what? You know what's going to make a difference? I mean, so there's historical precedent for presidents calling people SOBs. What's going to be really interesting is at one of these rallies, which of course will be carried on live television, the day that he calls somebody a motherfucker. That's when we'll know. Because this stuff's beginning to slip. One of the reasons that we can say the fun words we use here on the Horn, and others can use them as well on their own programs elsewhere, is that the FCC has no jurisdiction over internet broadcasting because we are not using the public's airwaves. It's that nexus between public and private that makes a difference. Okay, apparently we have a pool going now. I said that eventually he will call somebody a motherfucker. And Carol said, I think he's going to call somebody a cocksucker. It's too late for me to back down. So I think the odds are better with cocksucker. But this is Moran Monday. Just bear that in mind, okay? I'd say there's a pool now. What will be the unspeakable on broadcast word, on terrestrial broadcasting word, that Donald J. Trump or the Spirokeets make him say? So far we have motherfucker and we have cocksucker. Anybody want to add any words? Do you think that, no? Because exactly. There we go. We're gonna play Donald Trump dirty word bingo and figure out what it is that he'll say next. Because supposedly saying words like that on the public airwaves, because they're the public airwaves and precious little Timmy and precious little Sally listen religiously to President Trump's speeches and football games and Rush Limbaugh and things like that. So and because that's why there was the massive outcry years and years and years ago of Janet Jackson, occasioned by Janet Jackson and the nipple of doom. Just thing, you know, we have a censorship system in place for the public airwaves. Interestingly, they're the public airwaves, but the public actually has no say-so in who uses them and has no ability to remove people who abuse them from them. That's some public, those public airwaves. Okay, so but it's going to happen. It's kind of bound to happen. Wait, what? Les says, already happened, Bob. We're going to tax you motherfuckers 35%. Fuhrer Drumpf during the campaign. Is that a joke? Are you shining me on? But, so, there's... Work with me here. Saturdays in the autumn are football Saturdays, and again, because of the limitations that come about as a result of my DirecTV Now subscription. Bob, why can't you watch football on Free Speech TV? Or maybe the Young Turks? I didn't know they were doing football. Anyway, Saturdays in the fall are football Saturdays. And so this past Saturday, I found, oh God, they were giving away chicken up at the Wiggling Pig. So while I had attempted a couple of whole chickens on the smoker, I had never done pieces. And so I got this humongous tray, two humongous trays of chicken legs and chicken thighs. I like thighs. Meaty. They're underappreciated. But I got two trays of them for, you know, $10. It's big. Meaty. Weighty. And, you know, I worked the magic on them and made white barbecue sauce and marinated them in buttermilk and seasoning and stuff. They were delicious. And you know, put out pictures of it as the process went along. But I was also listening to the Mountaineer football broadcast in which my beloved Mountaineers very nearly managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory at the hands of the hapless, and I do mean hapless, University of Kansas. Not Kansas State, University of Kansas. I know my Kansas universities quite well, thank you. But anyway, they got to the pregame, post-game show, after the Mounties had managed to miraculously not lose. And so they were doing the locker room interviews, you know, And they were talking to the assistant coaches. It's their chance to really shine. And they were talking to Coach Wickline. And you know how those things go.
Well, you know, it was really just war in the trenches out there today. And I just want to say that we've got some of the finest young men's I could ever hope to work with. And, you know, they battled against adversity and they refused to give up. I'm just so proud. I'm mighty proud to be a Mountaineer.
That's changed a little bit. Because the assistant coach on the radio broadcast that was going over the public airwaves said, well, you know, the boys just, you know, these kids, they don't give a shit. And I'm used to hearing we use far saltier language here on the horn. That's that, you know, the brown word is almost prosaic. But there it was. Hey, boys, you know them, they don't give a shit. And understand, this is a sports broadcast to which our precious children listen. Because, you know, sports builds character. Sure does. But there it was. $475,000 worth of shit. Because that's the maximum penalty per offense that was hastened into law in the aftermath of Janet Jackson and the nipple of doom. Okay, Janet Jackson and the black nipple of doom. Even though it wasn't really black, it was just kind of a, you know, sort of a, you know, a mauvish, dusty pink kind of. But it was, you know, it wasn't a patriotic nipple. It was a one of those nipples. So we had to increase the fines for filthiness on our public airwaves where our tender and precious and impressionable children watch and listen to sporting events. And, because there was a great deal of right-wing Sturm und Drang in the aftermath. My friends, I don't know what is happening to America. Imagine the parents out there having to explain to their children as they sit down to watch something wholesome like football on television, as they sit down to watch it together and only to have a negress's nipple displayed for the entire world, my friends. How do you begin to explain that to an impressionable child? And see what he did is he took one of his monologues about Bill Clinton and he just inserted nipple and negress and, you know, boom, Rush Limbaugh had a whole new program. And so, but there it was on Saturday, the 23rd of September, 2017. Assistant coach for the West Virginia Mountaineers. Yeah, you know, these big boys, they don't give a shit. So I don't know if they're passing the hat to come up with the $475,000, or if they're just not. Maybe they've got a delay unit, and they just the young pimply faced kid back there at network control forgot to push the dump button. I don't know. But sooner or later, Donald Trump will say motherfucker, already has. I don't know that that was broadcast, though. That's the thing, Les tells me. He said, nope, peep YouTube, it's real. I'm sure it's easy to find. But was it broadcast, when the precious Chirons could hear it? And moreover, because we're in a different kind of America now, would it be a if Donald Trump said motherfucker on live television, would it be a patriotic motherfucker? Would it be a patriotic cocksucker? I'm not just saying these gratuitously. You can tell I'm asking in an intellectual and inquiring journalistic sense. I'm not just trying to salt the broadcast with motherfucker and cocksucker. You could tell the difference. I know you could. The Horn Family Community Congregation is an astute and discerning group, more so than perhaps any other audience out there. So eventually he'll get around to saying it. The question is who he'll say it about. Then, of course, there's another on that list. Well, it's not a list anymore. It's just cocksucker. Motherfucker, having been already taken care of, I'm exercising a command level decision, and removing it from the list. But the real one, especially given who it is that he's pissed off at, is how long it's going to take him to say that word. You know, that word. I don't even like using it journalistically. As a white person, even if you use it journalistically, even though I've argued in the past that newspapers need to spell it out when it gets used, it still feels like a weaponized word. But I mention all this because in terms of the public airwaves, there is something out there that is far, far more revolting. And I would not know about it had Carol Baker not alerted it to me. And I'm digging for it right now. I saw some, and I retweeted, some observant person said, you know, if America had gotten half as upset about a knee in Freddie Gray's back as they got about Colin Kaepernick putting his knee on the ground, none of this would be happening in the first place. Which was echoed by our friend Joy, who said, sweet holy virgin, mother of the living God, amen. If only people would get one gazillionth as worked up over police brutality and the unjust treatment and summary execution of people of color on the streets of this country as they get over the fucking national anthem and fucking flag, I gotta stop reading the comments section. Yeah, stay out of the comments section. But over in St. Louis, apparently FCC regulations do not apply. I mean, it used to be that screwing up look, Howard Stern, who makes ungodly amounts of money and rose to a position of fame and prominence by having pushed the envelope of what constitutes on-air obscenity. Well, Howard Stern left terrestrial radio. He bailed out because the FCC was kind of living on him, riding him every time that he would say something off color. And that's how Howard Stern wound up over at what is now Sirius XM satellite radio. Not so out in St. Louis or the St. Louis area. No. And this is, you know, this is one of those things that you kind of read, then you kind of tilt your head like a dog looking at the television set, to the extent that it's astonishing that you know what America is, you know how America is, and yet you find yourself kind of amazed that this is part of our reality. Arnold pointing out broadcast of obscenity is defined by the audience. Well, that may be the case. The guy's name is Bob Romanik, R-O-M-A-N-I-K, Romanik. And in the name of free speech, he is routinely using that word. And he gets to. Now I'm sort of at sixes and sevens here, again, about whether or not to share this audio. I don't want it to be deemed to be gratuitous on my part. Like I said, I consider this word to be a weapon. There's no way that it isn't a hurtful word. Particularly, always, when used by a white person. Well, that's what Bob Romanik is as a white person. He's out of Belleville, Missouri. And he's been at this for quite some time. And not only is he a shock jock who uses that word with 2 G's, an I, an E, an R, an I, and an N that isn't ginger. He I'm sorry, Belleville, Illinois, but not Belleville, Missouri. He used his program as a self-promotion for his political campaign. In the February 2017 editorial by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, that's how long this has been going on and, you know, allowed to go on. The editorial board of the St. Louis paper says, and they put it in italics under the headline, "A Caution to Readers. This editorial contains extremely offensive quoted material attributable only to the speaker and not this newspaper." So the newspaper itself printed the word, no asterisks. And that makes a difference. And it's not just that word, there's an other word. A word, a slur for a person who's gay uses that too. Oh, look, let's. If you're offended by this, please understand that I do not use it to offend. These are your airwaves. This isn't cable. This isn't internet. This isn't satellite. This is the broadcast airwaves. It's being sent into space, and it could be picked up by anybody with something as simple as a radio. In particular, this is a. A denunciation of a performer. And of course it has to do with someone who criticized the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini in the days leading up to the inauguration. All right? But it's not just this broadcast. There's more. As Carol points out, this went way beyond saying the word. I think it was the fucking modifiers I found equally offensive. You'll see what she means.
You feel like you just took a good crap? Don't you feel constipated and just took a good crap? Because that's what we did. We took a good crap today, just like Waka Flocka Flame did. Waka Flocka. He took a good crap on our president-elect shirt, our white president. Now, if it'd be another black man, you think that Trump has done anything to this man? Trump will probably do more for this black nigger than Obama's ever done for the proud black community, in my opinion, of course. Think about it. We're talking about Waka Flocka, that greasy black nigger son of a bitch. Not a proud white not a proud black person. Definitely not a proud white person. But it says you should not flaunt your support for Donald Trump at a Waka Flocka show. Why not? That's anybody's right. I tell you what, you black bastard. Let me wear a Trump shirt, then you grab it off me. You'll be the deadest son of a bitch walking around. What the hell's wrong with people? What the hell's wrong? Hey, before I forget about it, I met a four-year-old fan of mine up in Grafton yesterday. They pulled up where we were at. Drexton Cap and his mother and father, Mike and Kay Cap, out of Trenton, Illinois. Thanks for listening. The father, Mike, said that Drexton could mimic my show, my intro, so we're going to get him in here and do a promo so I can play it. But Drexton, you'd be good out there, buddy. Drexton Cap, 4-year-old, listens to the show every day. I hope to hell I don't screw him up too bad. But people, you got to be realist, not racist. You gotta be realist.
One. The all-new 1190 AM KQQZ, proudly broadcasting in the United States of America. The greatest country on God's green earth.
Yeah. Silent R. Lamar says, that man needs a cantankerous onion. Where do you want to put it, Lamar? I love the fact that he brags about having a four-year-old listener. After he's gone off on a, not after. That may be clipped together, but I don't think, no, I think that was part of the same segment. You can kind of hear the edits. And he says that the four-year-old can mimic his intro perfectly. You know, we're on the internet here, and I remember a time when if I was going to let go of a couple of fun ones, I'd say now. We're going to have a little countdown here. Get little Timmy and little Susie out of the room because Uncle Bob's about to use some of the fun words. And I don't even have to do that because I presume that everybody knows that this is not Romper Room. But here's a guy bragging about having a four-year-old listener who can mimic him personally, and the thing that he's just given him to mimic, well, you heard. You caught that, did you, Arthur? Arthur says, Trump's done more for this, in my opinion, of course, because I know I'm talking bullshit. That's January of this year. Is he still in the air? Has anybody done anything about him? And by done anything about him, I meant removed him from the public airwaves. But the thing is, he was worthy of notice by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, which is not exactly a tiny little low-circulation newspaper. And they used a preposition in their editorial. At it again. At it again. As they noted, he uses a group of low-powered AM radio stations to broadcast messages riddled with obscenities and hate speech. Ahead of the November 8th election, he also regularly used his program to promote his own candidacy for the Illinois House without reporting it on campaign finance reports. He lost the election. He's a two-time loser felon. Obstruction of justice and bank fraud. As the St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial board notes, when we last wrote about Romantic in November of 2016, he was using his weekday broadcast to denigrate a political opponent as a cross-dressing... Yeah, that word. The one that the British used to mean cigarette, or used to use. They noted way back then, he exploded in anger at our editorial criticism, then went to extremes to repeat his previous hate speech on air, as if to suggest he can say whatever he wants. And of course, it may well be that he can, because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. And that clip that you heard, that went on for 50 minutes. Along the way, he also did a mocking black accent. And as he invited people to call in, he said, I know what a black greasy son of a bitch's take will be. Well, he's got every right to do that. Along the way, he also referred to people who don't think it's okay to use the public airwaves to... Or, you know, it's not okay to use that word at all. They were ignorant son of a bitches. Huh. Son of a bitch. Almost makes you wonder if maybe they're piping the feed into the Oval Office for the Mango Mussolini's delectation. The Post-Dispatch noted the FCC was reluctant to intervene previously, citing First Amendment free speech protections. What the FCC overlooks is that romantic abuse is public airwaves far in excess of any known tolerance level. That's a hell of a lot nastier than anything. Anything! Howard Stern ever said. Because it's not just the word, it's the intent. And for anybody who would say, and of course nobody will because this is the Horn Family Community Congregation, yeah, but if you're talking about intent, Bob, that's thought crime. Intent has been a critical element of criminal law just about as long as there's been criminal law. Romanek's commentary meets two of the Supreme Court's three criteria for intervention. He explicitly described Waka Flocka's excretory functions to the point of indecency, along with his own embellishments, and his profane language clearly qualifies as grossly offensive. But you can do that, as long as you're a Republican. Here's the funny thing, though. The FCC that was ignoring him was the Obama administration FCC. Why? I can only guess. And in guessing, I would suggest that it's because had the FCC taken him to task, a little low-power AM pissant, although he's got several stations, well, he would have claimed that he was being persecuted for his whiteness. Mm-hmm. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, but Bob, this asshole is, in his opinion, not a racist. You know what? What's sad? He probably believes that shit. This is one of the problems with race relations in this country. Well, I'm not a racist. Jack in Shreveport pointing out that people can lodge complaints to the FCC over the web. It'd be interesting to see if they weren't totally ignored. I don't know if the FCC chair has control over that or not. I'm sure if people can see their complaints. I'm not sure if people can see other complaints that have been lodged or not. Mm-hmm. Via Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. Son of a bitch, y'all. I told myself this morning that a comparison would come through equating the consciences of any number of NFL players with what a NASCAR fan would have to say or do in a similar circumstance of red, white, and boo-hoo-hoo blue. And not because we're a racist nation, of course, or because the president seems always to take advantage of just about anything involving free speech, so long as he can turn it into a racially infused and inflammable issue. Only because I have ESP, evidently sensible perspective. Anyway, I'm intelligent enough to know that the equivalence could not be predicted or predicated on such an issue as revering the flag, whether the official one or the Confederate States of America battle standard. We know the typical NASCAR infield fan will get excited over anything dangling for a long, stiff pole anyway. But I didn't want to offer my own biased opinion either. So, Hornites, what would the Patriot president see fit to dress down the right-to-white NASCAR mob with? I'll leave that question to other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, but I'll offer my own as well. Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because the NASCAR crowd is insulated by their whiteness. Although NASCAR did jump into the... No one asked. There was no one taking a knee at any NASCAR races. They raced in New Hampshire to with no problem whatsoever. NASCAR audiences are white, 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 white. And yeah, I'm sure there are still Confederate flags flying in the infield. I have no doubt of it whatsoever. But Richard Petty, the king, opened his gob and said, "Well, here at NASCAR, we love America, and anybody that took a knee, he'd be in real trouble." And the owner of one of the teams said, "Well, anybody takes a knee on my team, he's going to be on Greyhound bus next thing." But then, from of all places, along comes Dale Earnhardt Jr. Junior. Who, I guess, isn't he retiring or something? Or maybe he's already retired. He took issue with the other NASCAR luminaries who were trying to get their respective and respectful noses up the fundament of Donald Trump and said, "All Americans are granted rights to peaceful protests." This is on Twitter. Those, and then a quote. And who would ever have expected Dale Earnhardt Jr. to be knowing this quote? "Oh, we rednecks and hillbillies will surprise you sometimes. All Americans are granted rights to peaceful protests. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable." JFK. Monique over on Twitter said, Yeah, Trump's going to call someone the magic word that begins with N and ends with er. Countdown begins in 5, 4. Or that other beauty that begins with S and ends in C and refers to people of Latino descent. There's a lot of options out there. And sooner or later, like those infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters, and one of them eventually comes up with Hamlet, he's going to use one. Because there's a near infinite number of spirochetes with infinite connections down to his voice box. Yeah. Yeah. And so now we have a national debate. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Except for the fact that when we have a national debate, that makes some sense. Thank you for putting a little context around that. Sparky pointing out Dale Jr. is a big football fan, a big fan of the Washington Football Club. So then he would, yeah. The national anthem itself was written by Francis Scott Key and is a very, very plain paean, P-A-E-A-N, I think, yeah, to racism. You have to get down to the third stanza for it, and there's an argument to be made that insofar as... Marcus Aurelius can't define the word stanza, he probably doesn't know there are three of them. But the third stanza of the national anthem is pretty telling. It's a little-known fact that during the War of 1812, the British forces offered freedom to slaves who would join the British side. And they had some success. They, if memory serves me, they were called the Colonial Marines. See what they did there, the British? Implying that the United States was still a colony. Well, Francis Scott Key had a history of supporting racism. He was a white supremacist. At this time, of course, the vast majority of white people, white men, and white women in this country were white supremacists. That's one of those things that we kind of got to get our heads around. It used to be in this country that one did not need to be a member of a hate group in order to be a white supremacist. It was the uniform accepted orthodoxy in this country. But people of color were not as intelligent as, never capable of being as intelligent as, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing white folks. Thomas Jefferson believed it. Hell, Abraham Lincoln believed it. George Washington believed it. Martha Washington, just about everybody believed it because they needed to believe it, because that is how they, that was the underpinning of a racist system of enslavement. Francis Scott Key, however, took it further. He was belligerent about it. He used his talents as a lawyer to advance the idea. And when he sat and watched the attack on the bombardment of Fort McHenry in Baltimore Harbor, he just couldn't resist, and he wrote a poem about it. And so, you know, it's not a great poem. As I told Dr. Bill earlier today, if I had my druthers, the national anthem of the United States would probably be "This Land Is Your Land." But I could fall back to "America the Beautiful," a celebration of something good about the country, not something bellicose. But let's remember that the by 1812, La Marseillaise is being played as a sort of national anthem of France, and that's bellicose too. We kind of bogarted a little bit on things French. Go read a translation of the Marseillaise and you'll see what I mean. You've got blood in it and stuff. But Francis Scott Key hated, despised black people. And he was infuriated by the idea that people who were slaves would take sides with Great Britain over the country that enslaved them. Imagine. When he first wrote it, it was merely called The Defense of Fort McHenry. The first verse is what you hear sung. The second stanza is more of the more description of the, you know, on the shore dimly seen through the mists of the deep, where the foe's haughty host in dread silence reposes. What is that which the breeze or the towering sleep? Steep. As if fitfully blows, half conceals, half discloses. Sounds like a stripper. Well, he's writing about the flag. But then we get to the all-important third stanza. And where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave, and the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. In other words, what he's saying is in that poem is, yea, our flag still flies over the dead bodies of black people who dared to want to fight in order to be free of the enslavement to which we, our country, subjects them. Now, here's the fun part. So the national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, was in the public consciousness by the time the Civil War broke out. And Oliver Wendell Holmes considered himself a patriot. He was certainly a poet. He was of, I think, what was referred to as the Boston Brahmin class. He was born in 1809. He lived till 1894. He was the father of Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., who would go on to sit on the United States Supreme Court. That's a story for another day. He was thought to be one of the very best poets of his day. He attended Harvard and went on to become a physician. He hobnobbed around with Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and James Russell Lowell. And at the age of, maybe 32 or so, with the outbreak of the Civil War, occasioned by an attack by Southerners on another federal installation, on another federal fort, in another Atlantic coastal harbor, another southern coastal harbor, Baltimore, you know, Charleston, Fort Sumter. Well, the poet Oliver Wendell Holmes took a second look at the Star-Spangled Banner, because that, of course, was the flag under which the Union forces would rally and fight. It's not like the Confederates took the flag and went with them. They made their own. God, don't we know they made their own. And they didn't take the national anthem with them. They sang Dixie instead. The beating heart of abolitionism in America was to be found in Massachusetts. And Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. was an abolitionist. And so he took up the Star-Spangled Banner, and he wrote another stanza, the fifth and final stanza. During the era of the Civil War, it was included as another stanza of the Star-Spangled Banner. It has since disappeared, as have the other four stanzas, including the race, the really, really vicious, hateful, bloody, murderous, racist one. But I got to thinking that, you know, it would be beneficial in the midst of this discussion to point out this stanza, because it is a direct rebuke of everything that the South was standing for and everything that a racist like Francis Scott Key had stood for. Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., who, by the way, had almost single-handedly saved the USS Constitution. He wrote a poem called Old Ironsides. When word came, when word leaked out, got out, whatever, that warship was going to be scrapped, he wrote a poem that got the nation so worked up that we wound up saving it, and it sits in Boston Harbor to this day. So he had considerable influence. And with all four stanzas of the national anthem before him, he wrote, "When our land is illumined with liberty's smile, if a foe from within strike a blow at her glory, down, down with the traitor that dares to defile the flag of her stars and the page of her story." Okay? That's pretty clearly directed squarely at the people who fired on Fort Sumter. He viewed them as traitors. He viewed them as a foe from within. The next quatrain, however, I don't know how others will take it, but I think it has a certain beauty, a certain abolitionist beauty. Now, he said the flag of her star, so then he says, "By the millions unchained, who our birthright have gained, namely freedom, liberty, when those who were chained have been unchained and have obtained the same liberty that the rest of us take for granted and have always had, by the millions unchained who our birthright have gained, we will keep her bright blazon forever unstained." He says that it is the freeing of the enslaved human beings of the country that will remove stains, the stain of slavery, from the flag. "And the Star-Spangled Banner in triumph shall wave," and this is the part that gave me chills, "while the land of the free is the home of the brave." See, it doesn't take any courage to stand up with all the other sheeple and pick your nose and scratch your ass. And, "Do I take my hat off for this?" "Yeah, Bubba, you got to take your hat off." "All right. Marvel ain't have to take her hat off?" "No, she's a woman. Womans don't have to take a hat off." "Well, that seems kind of sexist to me." "Take your hat off, Bubba." Doesn't take any courage to stand for the national anthem. It doesn't take any guts. It takes guts to do what Colin Kaepernick did in the first place, which is remain seated. You might be interested to know you might remember, that's how it started. He just flat didn't stand up. Just sat there. But another player in the NFL whose mind doesn't come immediately to me, and who was a veteran of the armed forces, reached out to him and said, "You know, Colin, I understand what you're doing, and I understand what you're saying, and I'm not criticizing it. But if you really want to make a statement, take a knee." That being, you know, that's a football thing. Take a knee. All right, fellas, take a knee. Let's talk. And so, from simply sitting, Colin Kaepernick transformed his act of personal protest into kneeling on one knee. And I'll bet you Colin Kaepernick doesn't know about the fifth stanza of the national anthem either. This is one that needs to be highlighted. That it has a fifth stanza added to it that is a direct refutation of the second one. That acknowledges that this country is best, and at its best, that it is a land of the free and a home of the brave, when everyone has the freedom to exercise that bravery. And within the universe of playing the national anthem at the beginning of a football game, the people who are actually kneeling are the ones who are displaying courage. It takes me back to what that idiot libertarian columnist that I featured on More In Monday last week said about, well, you know, protesters show up, mill around, chant a bit, and go home to see what kind of coverage they got. Stupid, privileged woman. Do you think that's... Oh, the privilege. It's odious. That's not what this is about. It's also not about Colin Kaepernick. It's not about the goddamn national anthem. It is about the ongoing crisis in this country that is racism. Something that Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. had hoped would be blotted out in the aftermath of the Civil War. And, of course, there's any number of the various football teams reacted in various ways. Ben Roethlisberger, this program goes back a ways now, and once upon a time, there was a conversation I had with the one and only Guy James, who remarked to me, because Guy may be down on the west coast of Florida, but that man's a Buckeye through and through and will be forevermore. And he recounted once that he comes from the neighborhood where Ben Roethlisberger comes from. And everybody and their cousin knew that Ben Roethlisberger was a four-square, brass-brown, 200-proof asshole. Long before he ever went to the NFL, started wrecking motorcycles, and drunk-raping white women. Or any women, for that matter. But Ben, Big Ben, has a sad. On his personal website,
He said, I don't believe the anthem is ever the time to make any type of protest. The idea was to be unified as a team when so much attention is paid to things dividing our country, but I wish we approached it differently. We did not want to appear divided on the sideline with some standing and some kneeling or sitting. I wasn't able to sleep. I was unable to sleep last night over it. I personally don't believe the anthem is ever the time to make any type of protest. For me and many others on my team and around the league, it is a tribute to those who commit to serve and protect our country, current and past, especially the ones that made the ultimate sacrifice. I appreciate the unique diversity in my team and throughout the league. In other words, I'm grateful to have fleet-footed black receivers who can haul in some of the crap that I throw and make me look real good, and completely support the call for social change and the pursuit of true equality. Moving forward, I hope standing for the anthem shows solidarity as a nation, that we stand united in respect for the people on the front lines protecting our freedom and keeping us safe. I'll probably get some shit for this, but I just can't work up a real big notion that anybody in Afghanistan's keeping my ass safe. Sorry. Or that some young airman circling the skies above the Arabian Peninsula and calling in airstrikes to the Saudis so they can bomb some civilians in Yemen, that somehow that has a goddamn thing to do with my freedom, because it doesn't. Sorry. I will not dishonor anybody who decides to serve any more than I would dishonor somebody who decides to be a carpenter or a welder or a plumber. Work is honorable. But I'm not going to elevate someone above others either. Defying his teammates, Alejandro Villanueva, an Army veteran who served three tours in Afghanistan, walked out of the tunnel and put his hand over his heart. Well, the Steelers staying in the tunnel it pissed off the Steelers fans to no end. So, one person put up a video on Twitter saying, I've been a Steelers fan since 1966, but no more, and while holding the flag of the United States, set fire to his Steelers shirt. Another put up a video showing himself throwing his Steelers stuff on the ground. Here's one of my several Steelers jerseys. You've messed up, Pittsburgh Steelers. You've messed up, NFL. Not anymore. Never again will I waste 1 minute of my life following the NFL or the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because, see, they wanted people to... They wanted... Those maggots... those maggot Steelers fans wanted him to come out and maybe hold up a defiant middle finger pointed in the general direction of wherever Colin Kaepernick is, or maybe all the fans in the stadium could chant, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a bitch. And as Carol Baker points out, it takes a herd mentality to stand for the national anthem. The flag is a symbol. The anthem is a song. No vet died for either of those things. They died so that we could protest in the quest for a more perfect union. Petition the government for redress of grievances. So there's the halfway mark of the program.
several notes rolling in. Ron and Raleigh says, NASCAR loves black folks. Their money's green, too. And provides me a link to a story called NASCAR's Hopeless Pursuit of Diversity. Well, I got a feeling whatever pursuit there was sort of failed over the weekend. I'll read that after the program. Under the subject line, political football, James merely points out, who knew football was so complicated? Steve in New York noting, the Marseillaise is very bloody. I mean, wow, when I first read the translation, it almost shocked me. Oh, yeah, it's got everything but blood and gore. It's got blood, gore and guts and veins and my teeth, you know. Matt in San Francisco says, if you're okay with tiki torch marches but offended by taking a knee, you just might be a racist. Ta-da! First cowbell of the evening. Yeah, Marty points out, you know, Ben should be more upset with his performance in the game yesterday than what he did before it. And I agree. I don't think any U.S. force is protecting anyone here except for some CEO's profits. Kind of hard to avoid that conclusion, isn't it? By the way, Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, this is Steve in New York, says, subject line, loving America. These people love the piece of real estate that happens to be called America, forgetting for the time being that America extends from Canada above the Arctic Circle to the tip of Argentina. These people don't love the idea of America, which at its center is the Constitution and is way more than a large piece of dirt. And so, as I have passed over the halfway mark of the program, filibobstering fully an hour and 37 minutes, we'll take a break. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, you know how. Area code 304-574-8178 or via Skype, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Either way is fine. Email's fine, too, if you want to use that. Or, God knows, this is not all there is to talk about, although you might think so with an hour and 38 minutes of the program gone. And by way of an update, we jumped right out of the gate. Thank you, Charlene. And Charlene doesn't have anybody standing with her. Or kneeling, for that matter. One more thing about kneeling. Anyway, we've got $290 in fundraising to go to get caught up with the evening. Kneeling. Now, maybe this is just being a pissy and being a word, being obsessive about language. But I couldn't see this. I couldn't read this and not respond. Trump knows he's in a corner and has been tweeting his fool head off all day long. Many people booed the players who kneeled yesterday, which was a small percentage of total. These are fans who demand respect for our capital F flag. Suddenly he's German. and the nouns get capitalized. Many people booed the players who kneeled. God damn it, you dumbass. You insufferable, straw-headed shitbird. The word is knelt. K-N-E-L-T. And I will damned well warrant that every one of the 44 presidents who preceded you, including Dim Leader, know that. But not you. You jackass. You fool. You dunderhead. Kneeled. Capital F flag. Do you have to? Is there a pronunciation thing that goes with that? These are fans who demand respect for our flag! And now CNN's got him, got the spirochetes going up to a nice hot boil. CNN reported that John Kelly was opposed. Didn't like what the Marmalade Mugabe said about kneeling, blah blah blah. CNN is fake news. Just reported COS John Kelly. John Kelly gets parentheses. I don't know why parentheses. Why not COS John Kelly? Only the spirochetes can tell. Was opposed to my stance on NFL players disrespecting flag anthem country. Total lie. Because that was in all caps. I had to scream. General John Kelly totally agrees with my stance on NFL players and the fact that they should not be disrespecting our flag or great country. Wait a minute. Should not be disrespecting our flag or great country. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Carol Baker. Thank you so much. Carol says, the word you're looking for is dotard. That's D-O-T-A-R-D. That's of course, what North Korea calls him now. Although, I would suggest a new alternative spelling just for Donald Trump. Nobody else. Anybody else for whom the definition of dotard fits, someone in their dotage, can continue to use D-O-T-A-R-D. But since he's got such a big, beautiful brain, we're going to, and he's, genetically, I got great genetic material, beautiful genetic material, especially from my mother, who came from a place where the gene pool was so shallow you couldn't drown a piss ant in it. For Donald Trump, it's not going to be D-O-T-A-R-D. It's going to be D-O-T-U-R-D. Dotard. Only because it fits. And from the Department of Dumbass, from the Department of Doesn't Know Anything About History, it comes Eric Nickischer. Almost 30 years he'd worked at the stadium where the Buffalo Bills play professional football. Well, he's now quit. He says, it's a song about our country. It's something I feel you shouldn't disrespect that way. Meanwhile, I guess he's okay with just shooting unarmed black people where they stand. Now, what's hilarious, he's wearing in the photo of him, he's wearing an Under Armour shirt that uses the red, white, and blue and stars motif. One wag pointed out, I'm quitting the Buffalo Bills Quitters Association in protest of his shirt violating the U.S. flag code. The flag should never be used as wearing apparel, bedding, or drapery. another individual said, quoted him, "I will never watch an NFL game again until this ends." Is he talking about violence against unarmed black men or millionaires kneeling? Now, naturally, as soon as the story gets some legs under it over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, he will immediately have several job offers from several right-wing dumpster fires. Yes, Brother Deacon Asa, because you are also a practitioner of the art of word-knowing. I bet Trump wants all those players who kneeled during the national anthem to be hung. Steve from Georgia, stand with an observation. NASCAR radio play-by-play. Ernie turns left. Kyle turns left. Richard turns left. Daryl turns left. Minor cowbell for that. We needed a moment of humor. Hey, thanks very kindly to Ralphs. Thanks, Ralphs, for taking us down to 265 now to go to finish, so we can, you know, catch up. Just to finish last week, we need to do 120, so that puts us at 55. 265 to go with fundraising for the evening. I hate talking about it. You know I hate talking about it. If there was some way to not do it, you know, if I and not have to ask you to buy stupid bullshit that you don't need and won't do anything for you, I'd do it. I really would. But I haven't figured that one out yet. So, again, phone lines are open. We'll take a break. Bumper, courtesy of Ron and Raleigh, and it's a good call. This is The Horn. More in Monday. We'll be back. I'm Bob. There's never a bad time for Devo. Freedom of choice, Devo. Thank you to Ron and Raleigh for that suggestion. Very good indeed. Remember, because it was a hashtag for a while, dotard, D-O-T-A-R-D, hashtag dotard. You might want to use maybe just put that D-O-T-U-R-D and make that another hashtag. I mean, he doesn't have to spell anything right. Why should we? And that just happens to be particularly applicable. Yeah. Hey, by the way, a little piece of breaking news. According to the Washington Post, the Senate Republicans have admitted that their Graham Cracker Casserole bill, masquerading as, well, it wasn't masquerading as anything. It was what it was. It was a desperate attempt to kill off several tens of thousands of Americans and deprive several more millions of them of health insurance, access to health care. Senator Susan Collins today said, not there. Even though they had loaded in some sweetener for Maine and Alaska to bring Lisa Murkowski along and, yeah. So, supposedly it's dead, but remember, it's not dead. They can do something equally odious and even more vicious if they so choose come January and the new session of the new Congress. Oh, by the way, and I'm going to the phones in a sec. One thing to bear in mind. This whole latest controversy erupted, of course, at a campaign rally, ostensibly for Big Luther Strange's electoral efforts in Alabama, in which he's facing a primary challenge against Roy Tola Moore. It happened as Donald Trump did what he does, did what dotards do. Oh, there might be a song in there somewhere. Let's do what dotards do. Oh, that's... Wait, that's... I want to do what... Oh, what is that? Oh, talk to me like dotards do. Walk with me like dotards do. Ah, yeah. Sweet dreams are made of this. Anybody want to write a parody real quick? But, so, sorry, that just, the way things happen, they just, you know, now I've got that as an earworm running. Jesus Christ. Oh, screw it. Let's go to the phones and check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Well, just right now I'm making a wreath for Autumn.
Nice.
Yeah, a friend of mine went to Joann's and got the stuff for me, so I'm having to take a pair of tin sticks and cut the plastic leaves with the little wire things, but it's good therapy.
Careful with those tin snips. When my father participated in his crossing the equator ceremony. They cut his hair with a pair of them.
Oh, God. I'm sure he looked like, I don't know what he looked like. He just looked like hell. Well, you know, that was his ceremony, right? Whenever they crossed the equator or the international date line or whatever they would.
And it got vicious.
I'm sure it did. Particularly with a bunch of men on shipboard that had been there, God don't know how many weeks, and they had to let it out some way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going on to what you were talking about this this Trump thing, calling people sons of bitches and this, that, and the other. You know, what a turd. What an absolute turd.
That's why I want to start. That's why I want to. I want a new spelling for dotard.
Well, you got it, dotard. That's exactly what that son of a bitch is. Oh Lord, I mean, just as bad as he is. But you know, it's just. I don't know. You know, when Harry Truman called Drew Pearson that, it was, of course, because Pearson made some kind of comment about his daughter and her not being able to sing. But in addition to that, Harry Truman also said, yeah, I'm going to whip his ass if he comes over and says he'd say more about it. Truman was not anybody you mess with, that's for damn sure. He may have been a failed haberdasher, but he was a damn good president. And he was certainly no coward during World War One. That's for sure.
No, and there's a big difference, you know. If there's a big difference between a sort of semi-spontaneous utterance like that in regard to someone saying something shitty about one's kid. And Margaret was a kid, right? At the time, she was not a full.
She was blossoming, so to speak, and you know, she was playing.
But I mean, she wasn't a 30-something like Ivanka.
Oh no! She was just all on the cusp of becoming a young woman.
Yeah, late adolescence, shall we say?
Yeah, and she did have certain musical talents that Drew Pearson did not appreciate because he didn't appreciate Truman either.
Right. If she had flawlessly played for Elise, Drew Pearson would have found a way to bitch about it.
Oh, he could be a nasty son of a bitch when he wanted to be.
See, you used it too.
Well,
my point is there's a distinction to be drawn. You know, there's that old rule, and it applies. You know, don't talk about mama, don't talk about the family. And that didn't. You know, no, this is something entirely different.
Of course it is.
And it also by the way. This is not to just belabor the subject because we've got other insanity to talk about, but it wasn't really even a thing on the national radar at the time.
Mm-mm.
It pretty much, but that's something people need to understand about the dementia mind. It isn't a current mind.
No, it's not.
It can reach into the it can reach into the recent past, the distant past, anywhere, and just yank something out. The fluidity of temporal advancement ceases to be relevant.
Well, Bob, there are a lot of things about this man that are totally irrelevant.
I mean, he was free. Understand, he was freestyling when that happened.
Well,
I mean, those were not prepared remarks.
Well, like I say, he speaks extemporaneously, but you know, people who come, who make these kinds of remarks like that, it is a symptom of something very seriously wrong with that person. That's all there is to it. That's all there is to it. And there's one other thing I want to get on about. You've got other people who'd like to talk to you. And that's this military thing he wants to do on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I hadn't made mention of that, and I'm glad you brought it up. I don't know about other people. That just creeps me right the hell out.
Well, if they want to see what Trump would really like, let them Google up Adolf Hitler's 50th birthday on 20 April 1939. That's exactly what Trump would like. It's all right there, stored away for everybody to look at. For the celebration.
I take it there was a parade involved and goose stepping?
We talked about that before, and somebody pulled it up. Yeah, you can pull it up right now, and you can just see Hitler mounting his golden throne, and, you know, it was just, it was the largest birthday party for anyone in the world. And I'm sure Trump is probably jealous of what Hitler got in 39 on his 50th birthday. He wants one bigger than Hitler's, probably.
Well, see, not to differ with you, only for the sake of differing, I think he wants one of those military parades with all the missiles and the marching soldiers and everything.
because Pootie's happy, because Pootie gets one.
Well, also, look what Kim Jong-un gets, you know. I mean, they have all these missiles and all these things going down, parading down the street, just like the Nazis did for Hitler's 50th birthday, just like they did the Soviet Union used to do for any big occasion, like May Day, stuff like that. Oh, they brought out the best of their finest ordnance to, you know, to as a show of strength.
Tell me,
that's not what we're about.
It's said that, of course, he wanted one of these parades for his inauguration. And at that point in time, the military said, bad weather. They came up whatever excuse they could come up with, because we don't do that.
Listen, the military, if they really wanted to, they don't let bad weather stop them. Period.
No, that's just what they told him to shut him up.
Of course. Shut his sorry ass up.
But, I'm
getting bad as he is.
So there was... Oh, no, you got a long way to go yet, Jim. You don't have any spirochetes. But the French...
No.
The Bastille Day parade he attended this past July is said to have really made him want one, because the French did one. But I don't believe that. No, this is straight up, Pootie told me I really need one.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if you did one of those, then people like Pootie or Kim Jong Bad Haircut could say they're gearing up for war. I don't know if you caught this or not, but the North Koreans now say that based upon Trump's declaration of war, that they now have the right to shoot down American aircraft that aren't even in North Korean airspace.
I heard that. Yes, I saw that today. I tell you, the only parade that Trump needs is one that will take him to St. Elizabeth Hospital.
Well, we know they've got at least one bed open because Hinckley's no longer there.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know, I've just never seen a person behave so badly and so unprofessionally and completely without any resemblance or form of dignity.
And at the same time be adored by so many for doing it.
Oh, I know. I received sometimes, I was on Facebook today and saw a relative of mine's Facebook, and there was the White House completely covered by the flag. Now, this person and I are dear friends, and I would never say anything to her about it. We don't discuss Trump. The only thing I said to her about Trump, I said last year before I had to go in the hospital, I said, you know, congratulations, your candidate will win. But I said, as a corollary, I don't think he will end his term very well. That's all I said to her. And we never discussed it. We don't discuss that ever again. But on my Facebook, I hope she doesn't read mine, because there's a lot of stuff on there about him.
Well, speaking of language and the White House being done up in flag, they've apparently just turned him loose with his Twitter machine. Because he's been going at it great guns all day.
I mean, what president in recent history, with the advent of technology and, you know, the social media, Twitter, and hashtags and all these other things, snapshots and snap this, that, and the other, I don't know what they are because I really don't use them except that much. But, I mean, what other president has even deigned to lower himself to having to express himself in less than 140 characters or words?
Well, there's a larger issue that applies as well, Jim. There's this thing, and I'm sure you're aware of it, called the Presidential Records Act. Ever heard of it?
I remember that.
Every presidential communication is supposed to be archived.
Of course it is.
And, you know, going way back into the Iran-Contra affair, I remember
lengthy discussions in those hearings about Pross notes. Remember those? And that was an early form of internal computer-driven communication.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went from that to talking about her emails. Now, it turns out that Jared Kushner and just about the entire Trump administration transacts business on private email accounts, but that doesn't matter because it was her private server.
You know, let me finish real quick.
All of this shit is supposed to be maintained. It's supposed to be preserved. It's supposed to be archived and protected. Well, is anybody out there making sure? Does he have the right to delete a tweet? These are, after all, official pronouncements of the President of the United States. Well, he deletes tweets.
Oh, no, sir, because if anything should ever come up, if we should be called into question, it's going to have to be there, and he cannot delete that. That becomes part of, as a matter of public record, that is, you know, completely protected. I mean, once you say it, it's gone. You cannot retrieve that hour.
And then, because I know, you've mentioned that you've been a teacher, Jim.
And yeah, I was.
You're literate, and you know your subject from your verb from your predicate.
Thank you, sir.
So here's another tweet courtesy of Donald J. Trump. I am not making this up. Let's play. What the fuck is wrong with this sentence?
Okay.
The White House never looked more beautiful than it did returning last night.
Oh, God. Well, I guess the White House just jumped off its foundations and
the White House had been out tramping around.
It came back, and
it was smiling, and there was some mud on its design on its designer heels, and a couple of sequins were off of its dress, but it never looked more beautiful than it did returning last night.
Oh God, well thank you, Mr. Trump, for some place that you called it up. So happy that you had some good words to say about it. The people's house. Listen, speaking of emails and stuff like that, I've been hearing through Randy Rhodes, I think it was last week or whatever, all these emails that were sent to various officials in Trump's administration that were bogus, that were coming from I don't know where, maybe some guy in the UK, and they were sent through Gmail. You familiar with all that? But, you know, this is between Scaramouche and Reba.
Back up again. Give me that again, please.
Yeah, there were a whole bunch of bogus emails that were sent back and forth between Scaramouche.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple. There are email scammers out there that have been scamming the hell out of all kinds of different people in the administration, pretending to be one member of the administration emailing another one, and they fall for it every time.
And through Gmail. I mean, if you are in a position like that, you don't take anything, even personally, but not professionally, through Gmail.
Well, they do.
Duh.
They do. Jim, they do.
Well, I think the spirochetic, or if that's such a word, I think they all need to go ahead. I think they all need to take a Wasserman real quickly. real quickly,
David, in your native South Carolina, just wrote in to let me know that a Republican had tweeted, "I just got a stand or kneel email from POTUS with a push poll and ask for support. He's using our national anthem to raise cash. Disrespect."
Why does it not surprise me?
Nor I.
Why does that not surprise me at all? This man's capable of anything. And I can tell you one thing. What he's doing is to create a situation between Kim Jong-un, who was a hell of a lot smarter than he is, to tell you the truth. I never thought I'd say that. And I hate to say it, but he is. And he's going to promote some kind of stuff, because if he does that with North Korea, you know who's going to come in on North Korea's side?
China.
Mm-hmm. Well,
as noted, I got a couple of more episodes of the Vietnam documentary in over the weekend. And let's remember, you know, there are those who say, in regard to Vietnam, that we fought with one hand tied behind our back. Well, that hand was tied by China. Because having experienced what we experienced in Korea, namely pushing the Chinese all the way to the Chinese border, well, China then poured a couple of million across the border back at us and ran us all the way to the end of the peninsula.
Sure did.
We did not want that to happen. And so consequently, well, you didn't have the strategic dynamic available of just landing there and pushing them out until they signed a surrender. Because China's sitting there and they're ready to come in. And no matter how much of a pain in the ass...
China and the Soviet Union.
Yeah, no matter how much of a pain in the ass the Kim family may be to the Chinese leadership, they're going to honor their commitment.
Oh, China looks to them, their sons of bitches, but they are our sons of bitches. Speaking of sons of bitch, really, that's the way the Chinese regard them. You know, when push comes to shove and the red light's blinking, that's where they're going to stand. And this guy, through his, oh, Lord, you heard Kim Jong-il's reply. And it was, and I'll tell you one thing, it was a hell of a lot more literate than Trump's.
Well, of course it was.
I mean, it was
My 8-year-old grandson is more literate than Trump.
But literate in the sense of politics and, you know, every other thing. You know, he just... for some reason, I perceived that Kim Jong-un was a little more restrained than Trump, in spite of his fiery rhetoric and stuff like that. And so he's realized now, okay, you're going to play games with me, I'm going to play games with you. Because I know damn well that China is going to back me, and you can be so provoked into attacking me that you're going to have China unload on you. That's exactly what's going on here, in my opinion.
There's another fine point, and I'm glad you're sort of indirectly alluding to it, Jim. There's another fine point to be had here, and that is in saying that they had the right now to shoot down American aircraft that were not in North Korean airspace. They predicated that on, because Donald Trump has declared war on us.
Effectively, yes.
Okay. Well, if we had been assiduously following our constitutional requirements, namely that while the president is commander-in-chief, it is in the right to declare war or not declare war attaches solely to the Congress... We could say, well, clearly they don't understand our constitutional form of government. Only the Congress can declare war. There has been no such declaration. And consequently, Donald Trump can run his mouth till hell won't hold him, but he can't do anything. But because of Vietnam and because of Grenada, and Panama, and Iraq, and Afghanistan, and Yemen, and Serbia. Because of all of these things, we can't say that. Because the Congress abdicated, as Robert Byrd, say whatever you will about Robert Byrd, but this is the absolute damn truth, because as Robert Byrd pointed out, the Congress abdicated its constitutional right and responsibility and obligation to determine when the United States would go into war.
And they are crystallized in two, three words, or I'm, or if you want to use the contraction, I order. That's all it takes. I order.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's it.
And the other thing that plays into this is the authorization for use of military force, the AUMF. Remember that little legislative gem from 2002?
Yes, sir, I do. Sure do.
Now, that thing has been so broadly interpreted, and again, this is one of those pox on both their houses kind of things. It was broadly interpreted under dim leader during the Reign of Error, and it was broadly interpreted, really? It was broadly interpreted by the Obama administration so that it became a sort of catch-all for any military adventurism the United States wished to engage in, anywhere on the planet. Somewhere in the Congress, there are some right-wing, bloodthirsty jackasses who are saying, well, if he decides to go after North Korea, we'll just say it's covered under the authorization for military use of military force. Tell me I'm wrong, Jim. Tell me.
I can't. No, you know I can't.
And I don't like what happens inside my head when I see this madness, proliferating.
The whole thing is valid. It is invalid congressional abrogation. That's exactly what it is.
I mean, there's a system set up in the Constitution, and the authorization for use of military force ain't it. And we can go back and relitigate it. And frankly, of all the things we can relitigate, that probably is the most valuable one.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and this is what I was saying about I don't like having the stuff running around in my head. You know, I'm not walking around shaking or quivering with fear, okay? The North Koreans are not going to come up Gawley Mountain anytime soon. But for
the thing about it is... people whom they have influence over, and because of a mousetrap theory of ping pong balls, they just might send something coming our way. You know, it's just it's just like Barbara Tuchman back in the Guns of August.
Yeah,
how one thing led to another. You know,
there were all those interconnected treaty obligations that nobody really knew about until it became time to wait a minute. We said, oh, dear. Well, we know about one treaty obligation on the Korean Peninsula, and that is that China has said that it don't matter who attacks them. China will jump in on their side. And you know what? China will honor that treaty.
Yes, they will. I mean, you know, Mao Zedong once said, he would ask, and of course he is long in the past of Chinese history, he was asking if he were to lose, how many millions of people? He said, well, I have 300 million left. That was his attitude.
Yeah.
And his mentor, Stalin, said, well, you know, one death is a problem, but a million... that's just a statistic.
Yeah, that's I've seen that ascribed to the Nazis and to Stalin both, and I don't know where the final word is on that. But moreover, Jim. And you know, you can tell me if I'm out of my tree. It's fine. I probably am. I am having some considerable degree. Of angst and of just plain old-fashioned cognitive dissonance every time I see the madness of this man. I mean, and again, I didn't like Dim Leader, and he's still a disaster that history will judge very harshly, but I'm talking about my varied responses to him versus this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Dim Leader was a dry drunk. I'm still pretty sure he is and was, unless he's drinking again. I thought he was insufficiently educated and not up to the task of being president.
Agreed.
I freely admit all those things.
Oh, big time agreed.
You know, in bed by nine, sitting there with his Game Boy in the White House, in the residence bedroom, you know, that was him. But I did not feel about him the same way I feel about Trump.
Nor do I. You know, he was.
I don't recall, Jim, any conversations or even me wondering what would happen if it came to the point where he had to be removed from office. You looked at Dim Leader and you thought, you know, before the election of 2004, we said, this guy's got to go. We got to beat him. Of course, they stole it again in Ohio that time, Florida the first time, Ohio the second. So then it was like, all right, we got to just oppose him. We got to make sure that he can't do anything that he wants to do. And we got to get to 2008 and make sure that another Republican doesn't replace him. I mean, that's kind of the typical American electoral thing. I mean, Republicans think the same way about Democrats. Okay, well, you know, Johnson's not going to run. We got to beat whoever the Democratic nominee is in 1968. Boom, we get Nixon. It's just politics. But every day in this country now, I am nagged, I am worried, I'm aggravated by this notion of, when will someone get this man's hands, this madman's hands, off the levers of power before he gets us all killed?
Before it's too late, exactly.
And that, and that leads you down some very, very dark roads, Jim.
Yeah,
you know, when you're sitting here thinking, well, you know, maybe it's time for a military coup. You know, you don't want one of those.
You know, I actually had a friend call me up who lives in Beckley. He was very worried about the same things that you're worried about. And he said to me, he said, you know, I've not been as good a friend to you as I could have. And I'm sorry for that, but I wish to part company on good terms. And I said, what do you mean? He said, have you not seen the news? And I said, yeah, I have. I said, I had hoped it would not come to this. But I'm afraid it has. And we're there. This is not a TV, made-for-TV movie by HBO. I mean, we're looking at a very dark abyss.
I mean, this isn't even 7 days in May.
No, it's not. We're talking about somebody who's absolutely crazier, as you would say, crazier than a sprayed roach. I mean, at least a roach seems to have the presence to realize when you whip out a can of Raid, he's going to take off. This guy doesn't. And he's just tickling. Well, he doesn't have a beard of the North Korean dictator, whatever. And, you know, he's just really giving him an excuse. And as far as shooting our planes down and the flyover, that's just the kind of thing it would take to precipitate a real, real serious, deadly problem. I mean, he's already made the statement. If you do this, and he will, I can guarantee he probably will. No, he will. Ain't no probably to it. So that could be the casus fideris for a nuclear Armageddon. So I'm sure that idiot in the White House will probably do something from which there will be no return. He's just that fucking crazy.
I'm sorry about
my language.
No, that's okay. I find myself thinking the unthinkable.
I wonder where the doomsday clock is now.
I suspect it's where it was on the inauguration day, because the people who maintained the doomsday clock went fuck it and went out and got loaded.
I'm sure it's probably 1 second before midnight.
I look for places to try to sort of keep myself in a sense of perspective and context. You know, as with the election of Abraham Lincoln, before Lincoln was ever in office, with Buchanan still in the White House, North and South, everybody in this country knew there was going to be war.
A war. Yeah, it had to happen. It was boiling and boiling and boiling to the point that, you know, there was the immediate cause cast against those long-lying causes, or, you know, there's the immediate cause and the ones that have gone behind it, okay? I can't remember the term. I used to know it quite well. God, my mind is gone.
Everybody knew. And they knew it was going to be that most awful of wars, okay? We have this thing with the Civil War where, thanks to people like Ken Burns, we have romanticized it.
To a certain extent, but he's shown some pretty explicit, horrible things.
Yeah, but it was all black and white and grainy, and it was Matthew Brady, and so what?
Bobby, it wasn't to me. It looked pretty nasty to me about these.
You're not the average television viewer, okay? You are certainly not the average American, Jim. Whatever we agree or disagree on, you are not the average American, and I think we can both damned well agree on that.
Well, I thank you for that compliment.
There's always the terrible, terrible, terrible possibility of war being romanticized. You know, for as horrifying as that Hollywood work was, and I mean, there were people walking out of the, when it premiered, there were veterans walking out of the movie theater who had been severely triggered by it. The opening sequences of Saving Private Ryan were more than a lot of people could stand, but there were people who also sat right there in the chair going, wow, cool. Okay.
Wow, cool. About a man's leg being blown off?
Yeah, goddamn. Okay? I mean, that's...
Oh,
that.
Dear. I can't even watch that movie. I watched it one time.
I rest my case.
And that's the only thing I wanted to see. As a matter of fact, I think in the middle of it, I had to go in the kitchen to make myself a real stiff scotchy water.
I mean,
I've never
been anywhere that shots were being fired in anger. I've had a bullet whiz past my head that was fired in drunken negligence, and I about shit myself over that. Okay, I'm not going to sit here and get all John Wayne.
I mean, think about having number one being trained for it, and there's no training that can prepare you for that type of situation. None.
What were the final statistics? Less than 50% of the people who had weapons in their hands in the Civil War actually fired them when it got right down to it, because they were just petrified.
Look at what they were using, and that was the big time weapon of its day. The mini ball or whatever, and they had developed
and the rifled barrel.
Mm-hmm. And those things were designed to take an arm or leg or you off or you out of this world. Period. End of story.
Exactly. And so, you know, with just seeking, and it's not even solace, of some sort of comparison, something by which I can sort of moor myself to what feels like absolute madness and chaos. I want to just predicate this. We've had a lot of talk since Trump, and before it, frankly, from the sort of people who support him, you know, the Nazis and the skinheads and the Klansmen and so forth, about the coming
American Civil War, the coming race war, okay? And now I see this business happening.
I'm aware.
Now I see this business happening in the stadiums. And
like I say, you
this
know,
is yeah, this is where my head went, Jim.
No wonder Putin supported Trump, because this is exactly the same type of thing that he wishes to happen in this country.
Well, and I got
fire a shot in order for that to happen.
I got something touching on that. But see if this scenario, and you know what, again, it's okay. Nope, Bob, sorry, you need to turn the mic off. Just go sit down, have a hot cup of tea, do something, you're gone. You know, just, you know, you get it, put your feet up, Bob. You've lost your mind. So feel free to tell me that after I tell you this. Imagine
Agreed.
This. Imagine this. Trump decides to start something with North Korea. Let's say, in the most optimistic of circumstances, it doesn't turn into a nuclear shooting war, that we're just going to engage in some conventional slaughter.
Mm-mm.
Let's say that there is a sustained objection a loud objection to whatever he does. Well, what do you think that all of those Trumpansies who have been weaponized by organizations like the National Rifle Association to think that this is a country full of subversives and violent Negroes, what do you think they're going to do, Jim?
They're going to go and they're going to try to take care of those people and see that they never aggravate them again. Probably. Yeah, they probably will.
I mean, do you see why I find that just bowel watering disturbing?
I surely do.
What happens, you know, what happens when, by God, if they don't want to stand up for our country, they can goddamn leave. That anthem stands for freedom. If they don't love freedom, they don't deserve to live.
And they don't have to physically leave the planet. Well, they don't have to migrate. They can physically leave the surface of the earth. I mean, there are a lot. It's just, what did John Kennedy call it? Nut country.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
Exactly what it is.
That's the whole country now. With some limited exceptions.
I have never seen this country so divided in my life, and I probably won't live to see it. You know, I will say to you personally, you have a wife, you have a family, you have grandchildren, you have children, you have progeny that you hope will progress beyond you. As for me, I don't have anybody except my cat. And I'm not trying to be selfish in that, but I can see why you would be much more terrified of a situation than I am.
Well, I've just got this nightmare vision of wandering hordes of NRA members deciding to enforce a little patriotism on our country.
Oh yeah, patriotism is that is a broadly and awfully misused word. That's for damn sure.
Because they have been programmed for it, Jim.
You got it. They've been taught since the particular ones that are coming up. They've had no decent education. They have no decent training or education in civics. They've had no type of worldview beyond that of Fox News. And they have supported this man because he is filled with bombast and rhetoric, and he is their type of candidate that they just love. And he can do no wrong, no matter what he does. They said, well, you know, and even the milder ones would say, I can't understand why they just won't let him be president. And my reply to them is, and I told somebody this, I said, he is being president, and he is the man you voted for. And to tell you the truth, I told them, I said, and for whatever happens, by voting for him, I hold you responsible for it. I have not talked to that person again. Sure haven't. But, you know, I've taken too much of your program tonight, and I just repasted, I'm sorry, I just put back on my Facebook the scene of those two dinosaurs ravaging Washington, and one is saying to the other, I think one is just probably kicked in the White House, and another one fixed to go to the Capitol, and his fellow dinosaur, his fellow Godzilla is saying, oh, hell, don't eat any of that. It's full of nuts.
We got to find some way to laugh, Jim.
Well, I mean, you basically, that's it. You know, that cartoon has meant more to me than any cartoon I have seen in a long time. And I think I've reposted. I reposted every day on my Facebook and apologized for it. I said, you know, sorry, here again, relevant, 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 but it's too true. And this health bill they're trying to ram through, oh, my God.
Well, and you know, they say they've given up on it for the time being, but it'll be back. It'll be back.
Like Dracula, it will rise from the grave, and that's for damn sure. It will. And they're going to hurt so many people.
In the icy winds off the Potomac of a brutal Washington January.
You got it. And these people don't need to be hurt. They've done nothing to anybody. All they're trying to do is to live and to survive and to attempt to obtain medical attention to extend their lives and not have them brutally attenuated by people in our capital who, unfortunately, in their own minds, or their own minds, these people mean nothing to them. They don't care. As far as I'm concerned, in their opinion, that'll be that many less people to worry about, you know? And it's just like in Scrooge, they said, you know, well, aren't the workhouses fill enough, then they should die and decrease the surplus population.
That's about the size of it.
Brother, that's my only thing I've got to say. I can't add much more to it without, you know, going around the prickly pear at 8:45 in the evening, or 8:45 in the evening. But, you know, that's just about it.
I understand. Yeah, well, Jim, hang on.
Yes, sir.
Hang on. God only knows what we'll be talking about by tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true. Like I said before, what will he do next? You have a good evening, sir.
All right. Bye now. Bye-bye. Our buddy Jim. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one that's creeped out by all of this. Because on the one hand, you would look at this NFL business and go, eh, you know, it's a pop culture. But no. One, the thing that began it, namely the problem of racist policing in this country, remains deadly serious. Our obsession with firearms remains deadly serious. A good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical church in Antioch, Tennessee, somewhere near Nash, Vegas, got shot up over the weekend. Pretty sure it wasn't Muslims. By the way, big thanks going out. Thank you to our dear friend Jude. We just took the fundraising goal down to 245 to go. Thank you. We need not to climb into a huge hole this week. Really, really need not to. Thank you so much. Thank you so very much. I want to share something with you before I go over and talk with John in Central PA. Again, I try to look for places in history that other countries have seen themselves in times of crisis and and wondered how they dealt with it. And so I ran off, as is my wont, you know. Oh, God, he's going to talk about Roman shit again. Well, sorry, there's relevance. The people who... the nature of the education of the people who did things like write the Declarations of Independence and Constitutions and did all that high-minded slave-owning thinking were steeped in the classics, and in particularly in Cicero. And so there's a speech, and it, of course nothing approaching stenography appeared in ancient Rome. It was sort of reconstructed, arguably, by Cicero and his slave scribe, as a representation of what he said on the in the Senate House that day. It's called In Catilinam 1. He delivered a series of orations, and it's in regard to someone he perceived to be a traitor named Catiline. And he references Catiline by name. He says, "When, O Catiline," because Catiline was a member of the Senate, Catilina. What happens if you, because it was kind of shocking when I went and reread it. What happens if you replace Catiline with Trump? When, oh, Trump, do you mean to cease abusing our patience? How long is that madness of yours still to mock us? When is there to be an end of that unbridled audacity of yours swaggering about as it does now? Do you not feel that your plans are detected? Do you not see that your conspiracy is already arrested and rendered powerless by the knowledge which everyone here possesses of it? What is there that you did last night? What the night before? What is it that you were? Who was there that you summoned to meet you? What design was there which was adopted by you, with which you think that any one of us is unacquainted? That business about what you did last night. Do you not see that we know what he did? And with the exception of a certain group of dead enders and hard cases, we know damned well the conspiracy that he entered into with the Russians to obtain the White House. The Facebook disclosures are proving to be quite telling. 3,000 ads bought by the Russians. Some of those ads encouraged white wingers to get real worked up about Black Lives Matter. So you got a bunch of Americans who were motivated into a racist response to Black Lives Matter because they had their own native racism leveraged by a bunch, by some goddamn Russian trolls in whose interest it was to see America descend into chaos. You got a bunch of people out there hollering about the national anthem who were originally weaponized by Russian advertising on Facebook. And this is according to people who are actually going through the 3,000 ads. These targeted messages, along with others that have surfaced in recent days, highlight the sophistication of an influence campaign slickly crafted to mimic and infiltrate U.S. political discourse while also seeking to heighten tensions between groups already wary of one another. The nature and detail of these ads has troubled investigators at Facebook, on Capitol Hill, and at the U.S. Justice Department, say people familiar with the advertisements who spoke on the condition of anonymity to share matters still under investigation. Senator Mark Warner said their aim was to sow chaos. In many cases, it was more about voter suppression rather than increasing turnout. And I was sitting here saying the same damn thing during the run-up to the election. They are trying. There is a decided right-wing attempt to keep people away from the polls. If they can get progressives, if they can get liberals, if they can get Democrats to look up and go, oh, hell, there ain't a dime's worth of difference between them. Fuck it, I'm staying home. They win. And guess what? They succeeded, and they won. Long before this story ever broke, I said, this could not have happened without Facebook and Twitter. And now, by God, you've got a president sitting in the White House who can't communicate in any fashion resembling presidential. Instead, he uses a platform that's filthy with bots and is already... And in which his audience is pre-weaponized for his influence. Just saying. Let's go over and talk to John. Oh, by the way, like I said, 2:45 to go. Could we please at least get finished with Friday? No offense, and I'm not trying to be a bastard about it. But when we go into tomorrow, could our only hole be the hole from tonight? Instead of having part of a hole from last week? I mean, I got to take this trip next week. It's work that has to be done. I don't like being away from here. You know that. I don't like being away from my family. But if we could, it would be great. Hey, John, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. It's been a hot August, or not August, September. Today got up to like above 90.
Yeah, it was beautiful all weekend, and it got hot.
Yeah, it did. I wasn't used to it because we had just like last week or something. It was like 72 degrees out or something, and I had to wear like pants and a sweatshirt because it was raining. And now we got this nice weather, but it's like muggy. It's hot, muggy. It gets humid here. Very humid.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt.
But I was wondering if I could make my own nomination, Moran nomination for tonight.
Do please.
Bill Maher.
What for? Okay.
All right. Did you watch Real Time last Friday?
I think I caught a clip of it. I mean, I don't sit down and watch per se.
Well, he had somebody sitting down with him, a special guest, I guess, he was talking to. And I don't remember exactly what they were discussing, but for some reason, not once, not twice, but three or four times within a matter of a minute, Bill Maher says, I'm a libertarian, as a libertarian. And, like, he just, like, emphasized, he, like, said the word, he said that he was a libertarian, like, three or four times, and, like, it was with enthusiasm. You know, like he wanted people to, he was definitely trying to, I don't know.
Great, Bill. What do you want, a cookie?
Yeah, it's just, I'm thinking like, wait, what? You know, I have nothing against libertarians. You know, I actually agree with certain issues with them that, you know, I won't get into.
I do have things against libertarians because they live in a fantasy world, John. They think that everything they have is because they've pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps, when 99% of them are a bunch of cosseted people who've never actually been in the same goddamn zip code as a bootstrap.
Yeah, yep, you're right. A lot of them are born rich, just like, you know, like Rand Paul, for example. You know, Well, I just don't understand why he said that. You know, and then I was reading the comments because his YouTube video posts certain segments through videos on YouTube. You know, that, like the night that, like right after that, you know, it's over, I guess. And I was seeing the comments of the clip that I think, I don't know if it has it as him saying that on this particular video, but a young girl was commenting, she quoted what he said, and she goes, "Are you trying to, like, drive away your listener, your audience?" It was just, I don't know, I just couldn't believe he said that, and I don't know, that's news to me. You know, I guess that was him basically declaring he's a libertarian or something. But I just want
to.
Well,
no, I mean, he said that all along, because he's a liberal guy who wants to smoke dope. He defines his libertarian by his need to smoke weed.
Oh yeah, I guess so. Well, he always says he's high. You know, he's like, I guess he doesn't ever go on.
Yeah, that's kind of like
high.
That's kind of like Dean Martin would back in the days. Yeah. You know, would show up on TV, you know, with a cocktail glass in his hand. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. He wasn't.
Oh, really?
The guy was a hard-working fucking entertainer. He wasn't loaded on stage. And most of it was an act.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, Bill Maher, I think he's...
Oh, he may blow a doobie here and there. Maybe he gets higher than Jesus when he's off the air. But I'm willing to bet that he's... He's not, you know, sitting there on camera, you know, baked.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure. We probably smoke so often that it doesn't affect him. And shit, you know, because I guess it's legal there now, recreational, whatever that. But, well, the other thing I wanted to say, though, I just wanted to make a statement. So... It's okay for Nazis to go on the march because that's freedom of speech.
Right.
But it's not okay for football players to take a knee. I mean, that's not freedom of speech. You know, isn't it weird? Isn't it telling that these people, particularly Republicans?
Yeah, but look, how long ago did I say that? How long have I been saying that the First Amendment is nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry, okay? It's only freedom of speech if you're carrying a gun or a tiki torch.
Yes. Right. Man, they've exposed themselves with that, honestly. I mean, at first I heard people saying, you know, oh, it's about race. And I thought, oh, no, don't be ridiculous. It's nothing to do with race. And then I realized, I was like, wait, the way they behave, it does seem like it's racially motivated, you know, when I really thought about it, because – I mean, these people were silent. I heard nothing. No condemnation from right-wingers and Trump supporters about the neo-Nazis. None.
No.
Zero. Zilt.
Because they are them.
Right. Of course. But then with this shit, they're like, go batch. I'm so glad the NFL players are doing this. I'm so glad. It exposes them for the – first of all, it's fun to watch them get all – hot and blathered over this.
Well, yeah,
you know what I mean?
Look, you know, there's NFL owners need to fire them. Well, you know what? He can't. They can't. Because, see, the players have these things called contracts. And they also have this other thing called a union. Just like people who work in his skeevy hotels in New York have unions.
Oh, he doesn't want them.
And he hates them.
I think so. Yeah. That's why it disgusts me when I see union leaders get to, you know, meet with him and shit. That pisses me off.
Oh, I've been kind of, I sort of compartmentalize what I will and won't tolerate. But union leaders going and kissing the ring, that's collaboration. If Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have to go and talk to him to get him to slow him down from being able to kill tens of thousands of Americans, I don't put that in the collaboration column.
Oh, they talked to him about this healthcare bill?
Well, no, I mean, look, you know, the deal that they struck with him about the debt ceiling and everything, anything that slows him down. is a good thing from that standpoint. And as I've said before, John, I'm not going to insist that people be thrown on the blood-soaked altar of ideology, just for a win. You know, I'm not that kind of a leftist. Okay.
Oh no, no, I know, and nor should they. The only thing I'm saying is, how comes they can't make these kind of deals about people who are trying to hold on to their health care? And that, to be honest, and I'm not trying to sound like a dick, but that makes up a far greater amount of people in their base and their constituency than the Dreamers. It's true. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't have struck that deal. I'm just saying, why can't they also make a deal about health care? They're not bending over backwards to do that. You know, so and they're just letting it go, this hideous bill go through, and they don't say nothing about it. And that's the only thing that worries me.
And it should, because you can't turn your back on any of these thugs, and we kind of have to keep things separate. There's Trump and the evil shit that he does, the evil, mad, crazy, potentially world-ending shit that he does, and then there's just the everyday bloodthirsty evil shit that Republicans do and have been doing for fucking years.
Like this healthcare bill, man. This bill is hideous, man. And I thought I saw reports that Collins said she's a no, but Rakowski,
she's a no. No, like they said pretty much. Or, you know, McConnell indicated today, this attempt has failed.
Oh, really? Oh, God. That's going to cause people to have, what do you call that? Have a couple, the saying you have for when people go insane.
Oh, kittens with crocheted tails?
Yeah, that's going to cause the Republicans to go, dude, Trump, if this fails, Trump is going to be sabotaging the, she's going to, it's gonna be death by a thousand cuts, man. You know, it's. I'm not saying I want it to pass. I'm just saying that it's. If it fails, he's going to smother the ACA. That makes him a very dangerous man.
Yeah, look, he is at war with a certain segment of the American population, and there's that's inescapable.
And for voting for Obama, basically. That's because I saw some polling data that said a lot of the people that are hanging on to their health care and don't want this to be repealed voted for Obama in 2012 or something like that. So there's data out there that suggests that most of the people that are supportive of Obamacare are basically still loyal to Obama in some sense. And he has to know that, or somebody knows that. And that's one of the things that really pisses me off, because a lot of what they're doing is anti-Obama stuff. You know, it's just, I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't know why people hated Obama so much.
Well, he's a deeply paranoid man and has been for a very long time. Back in 1999, in an interview with Howard Stern, according to a story from Newsweek, Stern told him that if he was to become president, that black people would assassinate him. Howard Stern said that. And
really?
This was in the context of a fantasy ticket of him and Oprah. Okay.
Okay.
And he replied, in terms of getting votes, I think that Oprah would be great. I mean, you know, I'm very friendly with Oprah, and I think she's great. And Stern says, yeah, but I've heard a lot of white guys say they're very nervous if you run with Oprah, because then they'll kill you so Oprah can become president. You think black people will kill Donald? I don't think that, Stern said. This is what these horrible racists are thinking. Can you imagine? Well, I guess there's some racism out there. On occasion, you do see racism.
That your voice for him is so hilarious, man. But yeah, so he said that. Wow. Wow.
And that's 1999. He's been
right.
There's not been a lot working well inside that little noggin of his, probably since he was born. Yeah, like I said, his mama came from a gene pool that was so shallow you couldn't drown a piss ant in it.
Right, and that transcends, man. And dude, there's something very, very wrong with this guy. I don't know if he's a sociopath or if he's just a malignant narcissist that is like not well. Because I don't know. My sister said that she thought she saw a clip where he was saying that. Melania couldn't be here, but Melania was standing right beside him. Is that true? Michael Davenport or something was like making fun of it.
I don't know, but there's a 15-hour archive of Trump stuff talking to Stern that runs from 1993 to 2015. And
really?
Oh yeah, and there's a rich damn, it's a treasure trove. And at one point he said. He admitted that he gropes melanoma in public and gets off on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yep.
He fucking said that? See, that confirms that what he said wasn't just an offhanded comment about grabbing him by the pussy. And there's women that support him, man. Could you fucking imagine, dude? Every woman should go down to the White House and slap that son of a bitch right in the face.
Yeah,
fucking woman in America.
So November 11th, 1999, he's on the air with Stern, and he called because he's called in to him to hawk a prize fight coming up at that casino that he couldn't run without going broke. And so Stern says, he's talking about, and you know, this is what Stern works in. He says, so have you ever felt her up in public?
Yeah.
Yeah, as I know. I'm very well behaved, actually, and almost always I'm very down the middle. Have you ever felt her up in public?
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, he's into that shit. He's just a very disrespectful man. You know, it's incredible the things that he has done and said, and people just give a pass on it for nothing for this chaotic administration. There's people that used to work with him, under him, that said, you know, he's a chaotic person. Everything causes chaos. Everything he does causes chaos, and they say that, like, his businesses, his supposed businesses, they have to be run by somebody else, because people say, the employees say that everything runs a lot smoother when he's not around, you know? So, I mean, he's just, there's something wrong with the man.
Bad wrong. Well, I have run over the time, so I got to get out of here.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been a good conversation. John, thank you very much.
Yep. I'll talk to you later.
All right, later. See ya. Said the guy on the radio. Verbal tics. Some thanks to go out. Thank you very kindly to Glenn, who took us down to 235. And then a first-time contribution, courtesy of Mark, 225, 219, $218.70. We almost knocked out the last week's shortfall. Mark says, hello from the Urban Prospector. The amounts in reference to the year Boston was founded, 1630. Hope this helps. It does. Thank you. And I enjoy your show a lot. I am but a poor unemployed designer, or I would give more. My website is Practical 3D. Practical, the number 3, the letter D. Practical3D.com. If you ever need anything or know someone who does, keep up the good work and peace. Mark from Michigan, the Urban Prospector. And if you need some design work, practical3d.com. And so that brings us to the end of Moran Monday with yet more Morans to delve into. But we'll be back tomorrow, and it's Titanic Tuesday, so maybe we'll repurpose some. What do you say? Thanks to everybody who helps the show stay on the air. Thank you very kindly. Thanks, one and all. Thank you to our everyone who
you know, participates however you participate. Thanks for being there. Thanks for sharing your precious finite time in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgistan, and thanks to Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.